Hey guys, welcome to What the Fuck's Up podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Kelly.
And I'm your other host, Nina Barnett.
And today we have a pretty heavy episode. We were joking that we're basically crime junkies now.
Yep. We are in the true crime genre.
We are a true crime podcast as of today. Just kidding. But this story's pretty crazy and it's featuring Collier Landry. To give some background, basically Collier's father killed his mother, which is horrible. And I found out about him by watching TikToks, and my For You page knows that I'm a bit of a crime junkie, like we all are. So it fed it to me. And I mean, I talk about in the interview, but first I like didn't realize it was real because he's just so open about it and candid and yeah, but he gets right into it. So we just want to read you. There's an article from Esquire that came out when his documentary, A Murder in Mansfield, first aired. And it gives background that Collier doesn't really discuss. So we're just going to read through that quickly.
Okay, so the article is called Dear Dad, I Know You're Never Going to Tell Me Why You Killed Mommy.
Pretty intense.
Yep. Okay. Collier Landry Boyle awoke with a start. It was 1989, just 5 days after Christmas, and he heard screaming, then a thud.
The 11-year-old glanced at his beloved Batman clock. It was 3:18 a.m. Petrified, he burrowed into the covers and fixed his eyes on a soothing painting of a sailboat on the wall. Footsteps echoed in the hallway, paused outside his bedroom door, and continued on.
The little boy didn't know it then, but he just heard his mother, Noreen Boyle, being murdered in their Mansfield, Ohio home. The ominous footsteps came from his father, prominent osteopath Dr. John Boyle, checking to see if his son had heard anything.
It took weeks for police to discover Noreen's body, wrapped in a tarp with a plastic bag over her head, beneath the basement of a home John recently had purchased in Erie, Pennsylvania. He'd broken up the floor, buried her, poured over fresh concrete, and built a shelving unit on top. John was arrested and convicted on one count of aggravated murder and one count of abuse of a corpse.
In the documentary, A Murder in Mansfield, Collier Landry, he now uses his middle name as his last name, confronts his imprisoned father nearly 30 years after the crime, hopeful at long last to learn the motive for the murder by the man he calls a sociopath and a psychopath.
Yeah, so hopefully you guys were able to take that all in.
Yep.
It's a lot. It's heavy. But Collier is so open about it and, you know, has used his pain and turned it into something where he's helping other people and spreading awareness about, you know, signs that he saw in his father. And he talks to, you know, victims' families or near victims. Like he brings up at one point how he has this new podcast that's coming out soon that he started with the girl who ended up killing Dear John and like, not Dear John. Dirty John. Dirty John?
I was like, Dear John's a Nicholas Sparks. Swing and a miss on that one.
Guys, I'm going to try that again.
I was like, what kind of romance do you want?
Basically, it's the girl who ended up killing Dirty John in self-defense, who her mother was like dating at the time, but they were like estranged because he's a psychopath. Anyways, this is all to say that, yeah, this is a really interesting episode.
It's really cool. It's funny too. There's it's not like dark the whole time or anything like that, but it's really interesting just to hear, because I think we all watch like murder documentaries and then we don't really think or know the people that it really involves. So this,
yeah, and a lot of
really
people aren't like open about it after the fact the way that he is. Yeah. So that's such a true point. Like it's just so interesting to actually hear about it from, you know, a firsthand account.
Yeah.
But yeah, you guys will see that Collier loves to talk. So we do not just talk murder. We also talk him living in LA, his dating life, and a variety of other things. But on that note, here's today's episode. Hey guys, today we're here to tell you about one of my favorite companies called Crush Tonic. So Crush Tonic was started by my friend Sally, who is an amazing, intelligent person. She's actually been on the podcast before. So after this episode, whichever one you're listening to, go back and check hers out. But she has this crazy story where basically she severely burnt herself cooking.
And she was looking for all these different ways to speed up her healing process and eventually discovered collagen. So through that, it helped heal the scarring, but then she was also finding that her hair, her nails, and her skin were looking better than ever. So that's when she officially decided she wanted to share this secret with the world, and that's when she created her company, Crush Tonic. For those of you who don't know, at around 25, your body starts to lose its natural ability to produce collagen. So this impacts your skin, your hair, your nails, your bones, muscles, everything, and leads to issues like wrinkles, dark circles, thinning hair, and more. But all these effects can be avoided and even reversed by collagen. And she has these amazing packets that you can put into any drink. She has flavors so that you can add it to your coffee. That's the coffee flavor. She has matcha. And then she also has the original and unflavored packets if you just want to add it to whatever drink you have without it impacting the flavor at all. So it's awesome. And honestly, the company has taken off so much. They've partnered with and sold their products in stores like Sephora, Gilt, Kith, Erewhon, Equinox, JetBlue, and more. And soon they're even going to be available through QVC and Costco. So I highly recommend you guys check it out. They also, oh my God, they have these new anti-hair loss supplements that are in pill form and work wonders. They're made with ingestible keratin, which especially paired with the daily use of collagen means no more 8-hour trips to the salon to get keratin treatment. Your hair is gonna look better than ever. So guys, go check it out. I promise you won't regret it. I'll put the link in the episode description, but basically you can just go over to crushtonic.com and use code WTFSUP, WTFSUP, for 20% off your first order and 50% off soon to be gone matcha and original crushes. All right, back to the episode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to What the Fuck's Up podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Kelly.
And I'm your other host, Nina Barnett.
And today we have the absolute pleasure of being joined by Collier Landry. Collier is a filmmaker and the host of the Moving Past Murder podcast. Welcome, Collier. What the fuck's up? How are you?
What the fuck is up? Well, the temperature is up, obviously. You guys were just saying.
Yes, we were talking about that. We're
94
swimming.
And, you know, I live like a mile from the ocean in Santa Monica, California, and it is perpetually between like 70 and 80. Like, it does get sweltering sometimes in like September, but and I've only lived here 2 years. I moved here during the pandemic, but it is always nice. I never run the air conditioner, but my neighbors who live downstairs, they run their air conditioner all the time. And the crazy thing is they're from North Africa, which is one of the hottest places on earth.
Yep.
And I'm like, why are you the only person in the building? Well, of course, their AC unit is right out on my balcony, by the way. And I'm like, why are you the only people in this building that run your AC? I'm like, we live by the ocean. We get a breeze. He goes, I know, bro. I'm so hot all the time. I'm like, but you're from North Africa. Like, how does
this is not Attica.
How does this?
Something is not right.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's just, it's so funny to me.
That is funny.
They also make the most amazing couscous and food, so.
Oh my God, I love couscous. Wait, so where were you living before you moved to LA?
Well, so I've always lived in Los Angeles, and I moved here when I moved to California right before my 23rd birthday, and I moved to Los Angeles right before my 25th birthday. So in my 20s, I was here.
Yes, we loved
trying
the
20s. To figure out what the fuck's up.
Yes.
And you know, I've lived here for almost 20 years, and I you know, I love it. But
it's amazing.
I've always lived in, first it was West Hollywood, into Hollywood. I lived there for probably 7 years. Then I moved to the East Side, Silver Lake, Los Feliz area. Lived there for 7 years.
You've done it all. Separated from an ex, West Side, East Side.
Yes, got out of a bad relationship. Yeah. Moved in with some friends right in the middle of the pandemic, and I was like, you know what? This is not my vibe. We were like out on the outskirts. I was like, I can't deal with this. But we had a great pool, and I was like, oh, I love the pool. So, but I was like, you know, there's no traffic in Los Angeles, and my office, my studio at the time was in Burbank by the Burbank Airport. So I was like, okay. Realistically, I would never do this, but because there's nobody on the road, let me just try it. I rented a room off Craigslist, and I was here for like less than a week and I was like, what have I been doing my entire life that I've lived here?
I know. I kick myself all the time because I was in West Hollywood, which I love West Hollywood.
It's great.
I was like across from the Laugh Factory. It was great. But I'm like, why didn't I do 1 year by the ocean? Like, what the fuck was I doing?
The thing is that and I was telling this to a girl the other night. I said, all my friends told me, and this is the impression I was under. I was like, look, I work in the film business. I'm always moving around. Oh, the traffic's going to be awful, all this stuff. And everybody, mind you, when you live in Los Angeles, they're like, once you get to the West Side, you'll never leave. I'm like, yeah, whatever. So I was sure. thinking to myself, so my friends were like, oh my God, we'll never see you again. You'll never be over there, blah, 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 all this. And I was like, okay. I'm thinking to myself, how many times I would be in the East Side of Los Angeles and I would look at the phone and be like, okay, I want to go to Venice Beach. I want to go to the beach today. Okay, so it's going to take an hour and 20 minutes.
Literally so
long. And then I got to find parking, and then I got to do this. Yeah. I will tell you something. Never, ever have I looked at my phone since I've moved to Santa Monica and gone, God, I really just want to go to Burbank today. And just hang out. I wonder what's happening in Pasadena. Glendale sounds cool. Like going to the Glendale Galleria sounds amazing. Let's go to some shopping at the Glendale Galleria.
Oh, I'm like,
zero. If anybody's curious, zero times have I ever said that to myself.
Yeah.
Collier, I feel like
what I do say is like, oh, I have to leave. Ugh.
Yeah.
I have to leave my house.
So Nina's a stand-up comic. I feel like you could absolutely do stand-up. Like,
yeah,
you're very funny.
You've got good energy for it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for that. I am actually in the process of writing a one-man show, which is partially about my story, which we'll get into, and my life experiences. And I have this, one of the things that, you know, obviously the podcast, which you guys have discovered, is very heavy material. Yeah. It all came from, you know, it started with my film, A Murder in Mansfield, which is directed by a New Yorker, 2-time Oscar winner, Barbara Kopple. It's about the story of my mother being murdered by my father, which I witnessed, and no one believed me except for one detective. And between myself and that detective, we solved my mother's murder. I found clues, gave them to the police. They found my mother's body buried in a house in another state. We'll get into all that. But
that was that's amazing summary.
So it's very heavy topics. But one of the things that people say is like when I'm talking to people like trauma survivors, or like, you know, I just interviewed Chris Hansen a couple months ago from To Catch a Predator. And all these people that I interview, you know, whether they're trauma survivors, like Tara Newell, who's the one who killed Dirty John. If you guys saw the Dirty John series on Bravo.
Oh, my God. Yes. The daughter, right?
And Tara and I are actually. Yeah. And Tara and I are actually doing another podcast together called Survivor Squad. And I should have her on here. You would love her.
Oh my God, we need to get her on too.
Yeah, well, I'll get her on your show, no problem. And she's fantastic. You'll love her. Big ball of energy. But everybody says to me, what they all say is they're like, you have this really great sense of humor about all of this, which is so bizarre in a lot of ways. And I'm like, yeah, I want to do a one man show, which is part my story, motivational, but also adding these elements of comedy. Yeah. Like, I was in Las Vegas for Crime Con, and I'm talking to this girl.
Crime Con? I did not know Crime Con existed.
Neither did I until like a year ago. And then I was like, amazing. I'll go to like check it out, promote the podcast, which actually is when I started TikTok, which I believe is how you guys discovered me.
It is.
Yep.
And so I didn't want to leave LA in the middle of traffic. And I was like, okay, Collier, you're going to wait. But a friend of mine was using TikTok, and she's like, you got to get on TikTok, man. I was like, all right. I was like, I'll do 3 TikToks. And those are the ones that
they all blow up.
They blew up. There was like, so I had like 200 views or something. And I went to bed for an hour and a half before I drove through the desert to get to Crime Con. And I literally woke up and it was like, I had 1,000. And I was like, oh, okay, that's pretty good. And I had gotten 1,000, 2,000 on some of my posts, which were very carefully crafted and whatnot. I put the thing on TikTok. I'm driving through the desert. Then it starts getting like 10,000. It was up to like 500,000 on the first day. And I was like, okay, I've gone viral, apparently. Okay, this is crazy. Apparently. So I'm chatting this girl up who knew me from LA, very attractive, like my blonde hair, blue eyes, which doesn't really matter, but it was like the theme of my life for a couple of years. So it's now changed. But she's like, you know, we're talking, and she just broke up with a boyfriend, and she's talking to me, and she says, you know, I just like them tattooed and damaged. So I'm looking at my forearms and I'm like, okay.
You're like, here I am. I volunteer.
You're like,
I volunteer
can
for
fill
tribute.
That role.
So she could see, she could see the tattoos, but she doesn't know the damage. And I'm like, I look over at my friend and he had overheard it. And he's just like, I was like, you got this, man. Like, you got this. Because there's this nobody that's Super going Bowl. To
You're
trump
like,
you.
What a layup.
This
what
is it. Layup. This is a layup. Yes, exactly. And Tom Brady at the one-yard line. Three downs left. God. You are good, man. Yeah, and I just kind of I laid into it, and I was like, you know, I said, do you watch Forensic Files? And she's like, oh, yeah. I was like, oh, well, I have my own I have an episode of Forensic Files. Oh, you do? And yeah. I said, you know, you watch Dr. Phil. Oh, yeah, I watch Dr. Phil. And I'm like, you know how they normally have like three different guests and three different segments on Dr. Phil? And she's like, yeah, totally. I said, I have my own episode. It's just me, the entire episode.
That's how fucked big up my life trauma is. Yeah.
And it was like, by the way, like I have a documentary directed about my life. That's directed by a 2-time Oscar winner that's on Investigations. You watch Investigations? Oh, you do? Okay, great.
So did you have sex with her?
No. So we engage, and then she literally says to me, dead ass, you know what? I think you might be a little too damaged for me.
You're like,
and
bro.
Back to the stories of the stand-up comedy, I'm like, I don't always talk about it. I talk about it on IG Lives. I'm going to talk about it more on the podcast because I think it's fascinating. About my dating life and using the apps and all this stuff, which I hate doing because you can't meet anyone organically anymore, right? It's ridiculous.
Yep.
And I'm just like, you know, dating in LA is hard. Dating in LA when dating I came in LA here was impossible. So it was impossible to date anyone in my 20s in LA. And then I got a girlfriend, and then that lasted for a while. And, you know, but dating is perpetually awful in LA. Now, I don't know what it's like in New York because I've never lived in New York for longer than a few months.
It's worse in LA, I can say, as someone who's lived in both places. Because a lot of, well, also it's just LA is so spread out, so it's like hard to get places, so people flake more easily too.
Sure, sure. It's and you have, like, yeah, and, you know, you guys can jump on the train and it's really cool. I mean, public transportation is like non-existent here.
Going back a little bit with the Dr. Phil, I did watch that clip and the listeners should definitely watch it because I have to say, like, I was so taken by you as this 11-year-old on the stand. You were so articulate and well-spoken. You also, you're the same exact person, which is hilarious. Like, I
the
feel
same
like
exact
it's just
person.
Wild. Like, we were cackling. Like, we were like, he's the same. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't funny, but like, it's funny how you like already had a full personality at 11.
Yeah,
like fully developed.
And so when I'm testifying, I was 12. It happened when I was 11, like right before my 12th birthday.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is, so we made the film, and then I was not involved really in much of the post production process because, look, I said to Barbara and I said to the team, I said, my contributions to the film at this point in the editing and all this is I'm going to say I sound stupid there and I look fat there and I don't like my outfit, which I don't like my outfits at all, or my haircut or anything.
Preaching
I did it for
the to
film.
The choir
but
right now.
But it doesn't matter because what it's about is about the content, which is why I was like, I just removed myself from the editorial process. Mm-hmm. But I had put together all those tapes and everything, but I never watched myself at the trial. So I'm literally sitting in the theater in Chelsea in New York at Doc NYC Fest.
That's where we are, by the way.
Oh,
right now,
fantastic.
Currently.
And so is Barbara. Is she? She lives in Chelsea. And the trial footage comes on with me watching and I'm just like,
I wish you guys could see his face right now. I'm dying.
I don't. I haven't changed at all. It's the same snarky.
You're like it's a mirror.
It's the same snarky little kid. It's
with
the same
big
intelligent,
blue eyes.
The big blue eyes, and the just and doesn't shut the fuck up. And I'm just like, and it's and very opinionated. I mean, it's. It's crazy. It was just, and you know, one of the amazing things about doing the film and then doing the podcast is I was abandoned by my entire family during all this process.
What?
And I guess we're going to kind of get to my story in bits and pieces here, but this is very organic. So it's cool. But I was abandoned by my entire family. So my father's side of the family didn't want anything to do with me because they were like, you're putting your father in prison because my father, it was a missing persons case. Because he said, we're not going to call the police. We're not going to do this. And people can hear the story on the podcast, but I'm not going to call the police or TikTok. I called my mother's friends. I said, you need to call the cops. She's missing. This is what I heard. And the police came. It was black and white officers, uniform officers, show up to the house. And they just treat it as a missing persons case. And then I'm like, okay, what's happening to the friends? Oh, they're treating it as a missing person. I was like, it's not a missing person. She's fucking dead. And I don't think I used the word fuck back then, so I don't think I knew what it was. But I definitely knew what shit was. An asshole.
No.
But... But I say to them, and what happens is this investigator comes to the house, and his name is Dave Messmore. And I'm able to pull him aside, and he gives me his business card. I was like, my mother would never leave me. Like, my mother is dead. So when I go to school the next day, because this is like New Year's Eve, like vacation, you come back from Christmas vacation, right? That's when I brought him to the school. I got him to come to the school, and I told him everything, because I was safe in that moment.
Yeah, your dad
everything.
Wasn't there to like see.
Yeah, my father, yeah. Like my grandmother, nobody was. Yeah. So I was literally able to have an unhinged, you know, unadulterated conversation with a police detective. And I was like, this is what's been happening in my family. This is my father's nature. This is what happened. So my mother said, this is what I heard. This is what I found. Like, and I was like, I'm going to go home and start pulling shelves out of the walls to look for her body or look for her purse that she wouldn't have left the house with, you know, to try to find you stuff. But I'm sorry, go ahead. You were talking about the Dr. Phil thing.
No, don't worry. But no, it wasn't even that. I was going to ask, I think in one of your TikTok videos, you said that also, didn't she like say something to you? Like,
yeah, so I actually recently died. Put that up, and I'm still like, I took a little break from TikTok just because I had a bunch of stuff happening. And
it's like, overwhelming, I'm sure. Yeah.
Well, but there was also just like so much. I was finishing another documentary and I had things, and I also wanted to see, hey, are people going to continue to watch my stuff? Like, I don't know a lot about the platform, and I want to curate also some really cool organic content. But I'm like, okay,
totally.
Because it took off so fast that I was like, oh, okay, what am I going to do? Like, you know what I mean? I've been talking to other TikTokers, like, hey, how do you compose your content? Because you want to keep that authenticity and that genuineness that people seek out from you, and you know that. I mean, the authenticity is like my superpower, right?
Absolutely. That's why I was like, I need him on. 10 out of 10, I was like, immediately follow. That's how I am, though. Like, if I see something and like I need a guest on, I'm like, you need to come on.
Yep.
But yeah, sorry, continue.
No. But it's keeping that, you know, but for anyone's listening, I'm putting more stuff out there. It's just like, it happened so fast. I was like, oh, okay, I want to make sure that I'm delivering quality content, just like with the podcast, you know, and you know, because it is an extension. But my mother had said to me probably about a month and a half, it was like November of 1989, my mother said to me, look, Collier, if I would never leave you, which I already knew, but she said to this me, if something ever happened to her, my father did something, he had mafia connections, things like that nature. And I was like, oh wow, okay. But I filed it, and not that there was any mafia connections that were involved in this, but she did plant that seed. But I already knew my father was violent because I grew up with my father, right? And my father is a very violent person. So it wasn't like a surprise for me. It was a little jarring to hear your mother say that.
Yeah.
But I told this investigator, I told all this stuff. And then, it wasn't until I found the picture of the house, which Dr. Phil talks about. And, you know, my father had gone into the gas station. I talk about this on TikTok, but my father had gone into the gas station. I'm watching him. I open up the cubby hole in his truck, and I find the Polaroid. And I find a Polaroid of a house I've never seen before. And I find another Polaroid of his girlfriend or mistress.
So fucking wild.
With her two kids in front of a fireplace wrapped in plastic.
You knew her, right?
Yeah, I knew her. So I was like, oh, why is there a picture of Sherry with her two kids in front of a fireplace that's covered in plastic? Like this ding dong, this must be connected to this house. And that's when I told the investigators about it. And that's ultimately where they found my mother's body buried underneath the basement.
I cannot believe how fucking smart you were. That is so impressive. Like, you literally solved the murder.
Thank you. Well, with Dave, of course. But thank you for that. But this is also what happens when you're the last kid in your friend group to get a Nintendo.
You're like, I'm going to follow real life clues.
You're like I am going to read a lot of books.
And my parents, you know, were Ivy League educated. They both were from Philadelphia. They're from, they went to Penn, and
my dad went there.
So my father graduated from Wharton and then went in hospital administration or something. And so education was there was a very high value place on education in my home growing up.
Yeah,
Sunday fun day was literally we would go to this bookstore in Columbus, Ohio called The Little Professor. Because my father had to drop off, like it was a book chain at the time, and we would drop off my father's work for a billing service, and then we would go eat Chinese food, and we would go to this bookstore, and we would hang out there for hours. And it was like, you know, pre Barnes and Noble when they had little cafes. They didn't have a cafe, but they had sitting areas, and I would go through and I look at all the magazines and stuff, the Nintendo magazines that I couldn't have a Nintendo for, and all these things, and like read little books. But my parents, I grew up listening to NPR. It's like
I love NPR.
I listen to opera and classical music, which is what sparked my interest in that, which is what led me to go to music school, right? You know, NPR, my company, my production company is called Don't Touch My Radio. because I listened to 89.9 KCRW when I was moved here in my 20s. I was couldn't find any work, and I was going to leave, and I ended up booking this job as a movie extra. And I was listening to a song by a guy named by a band called The Weekend Players called Jericho. They were playing, and Jason Bentley, who is now the head of the, you know, the station programming manager and all this, but he had a show called Metropolis. And I was listening, it was like 10 o'clock at night, I'm driving down the 101 freeway, and I was like, oh, okay. And it just, I don't know, it just put me in this mood, and I started donating to KCRW. A year and a half ago, I moved to this place, and literally across the street from my balcony, I can see Santa Monica College, which is the home of KCRW, which is the number one NPR contributor in the world and the number one independent radio station in the world. So it's just funny how life is very circadian. I mean, I know your audience is like Gen Zers and millennials, and you'll find as you get older how life is very circadian, which is also very key to how you live your life, right?
Yeah. Totally.
And I'm not here to pontificate or anything, but what I am saying is that, you know, one of the things that I was, as I'm developing the podcast, talking to more people about my story, because I didn't, you know, when I came to LA, I moved to Los Angeles because I wanted to move to a place that A, was artistic, had warm weather. You know, it was either LA or New York. I was like, okay, I'm not into the cold anymore. And I, you know, I moved out here with a couple grand in my pocket, you know, and just like no job, no nothing. And just, I'm going to figure this out. And I moved to California, then moved to LA. And I, you know, I didn't want my story to lead me in a room anymore. I didn't want, because growing up, after all this, being on the trial, because it was like the one of the largest cases in Ohio history, criminal cases, period. Totally. So we had, you know, and he crossed state lines and everything. So it was national news. And plus the entire trial was televised. So I was on television. testifying for 2 days. Wild. And it's, you know, I kind of realized this in the last like 6 months as I was doing the podcast and as I keep talking about it. I grew up like a child actor with these expectations, these pressures, and everybody knew your story. So it's like, oh, that he was my character on this favorite reality show or soap opera. That's really what it was like. So I got really tired really quick of you know, coming in the room, people, you know, they whisper or whatever it is. I just would get really, I was just over it. And I wanted to start fresh. I need to go to a new 100%. Place where nobody knows me and see if I can make it on my own merits, creatively, intellectually. Can I meet a girl that will know nothing about me, not have the stigma? And granted, there were like very intimate people in my life, but I would say like a hand, maybe 10 people over the course of at least a decade that knew what my real story was. The very surface details people knew sometimes. Collier's from Ohio, his dad killed his mom. That's all they knew, literally. So he came from this tragedy, whatever. They didn't know all the stuff. So it wasn't until I made the film and then the film came out, did my colleagues and peers come out to me and say, like, what the fuck?
They're like, you really buried the lead there.
Yeah, and I had an ex-girlfriend like literally take a picture of me on Dr. Phil on an airplane. She's like, so you're on my... back.
She's right like, now. I'm confused. Like, but it's interesting that you like naturally went there, because one of the questions that I did want to ask you is about how you worked up to this point where you're so able to, as you're saying, like own your narrative and be so open about your story, because it takes a lot of vulnerability and like, you know, strength of character, because it's not easy to talk about. Like, I think about the, you know, things in my life that are shitty, and some of them I still can't tell people without maybe crying. You know what I mean? Sure. So it's just like, it's very impressive that you can talk about with like the articulation and humor that you do. Not humor, but you know what I mean?
But it is humor. And it's one of the funny, one of the things is that people, you know, of course you get people that'll excoriate you and be like, you shouldn't be doing this and blah, blah. Oh, you're exploiting your mother's death. And this is like, okay, first of all, this happened to me.
This is my
story. I was
story.
Almost killed by my father as well, twice.
What?
Like my father was plotting to kill me because he knew I was working with the police. Like this was a whole subplot that nobody knew about. He was taking me to Florida for a trip. And I told the investigators about it, and that's when they yanked me out of the house. They're like, you know, this kid, because I was the only witness to this.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, so for people who haven't seen your TikToks yet, you have like read his letters and stuff like that, that he was
I've only done that once
young.
And it really went, it really resonated with people. I'm like, and I do that on a podcast, but I have 500 letters from my father.
Jesus Christ.
Over the course of his entire incarceration. And it is very interesting to get into his psyche. And I'm going to start putting those, more of those, on TikTok, because they seem to, and they also, the thing about sharing these types of things and this vulnerability that we're getting to is, the amazing thing is that you find that it speaks to people that you don't even know are listening. And when I set out to make the film, I was like, okay, I want to heal myself and I want to change one. I want to speak to that kid who is in foster care, abandoned by his entire family, staring into the nadir of his life and literally going, okay, how am I going to find the courage to testify against this monster in court? And where does that come from, right? And I want that kid to know, like, it's going to be okay. Like, you're going to be all right. It's going to, you're going to have bumps and bruises and maybe a couple breaks and sprains, but you're going to survive and you're going to heal and you're going to be okay. And so reading those letters, talking about my story and sharing the intimate details of my life and that whole scenario, you know, wanted to change that one kid's life. And then it was like, I logged into Instagram, even like 6 months ago, because I didn't see messages. I had like 10,000 messages. I would travel around the world with the film and people would be like, you have no idea. And people will message me like, you have no idea the people that you're impacting. Like, you really don't. And I will randomly have people that I will run into and they'll be like, oh, I know your story. Or thank you for telling your story. I'm like, okay. You know, it is amazing. It's very, it keeps me very humble, right? And it makes me feel good that I've done something with something that is so horrible. Yeah. You know, I was talking to a girl who's a psychotherapist the other day, and she said to me, she's like, and this is what I'm going to call the one man show, by the way. But she said, you know, you're the outlier.
Ooh, that is a good
like,
name.
You are. There is no reason. Like, you should be literally in East LA, under a bridge, talking to yourself, shooting heroin, living as an addict, muttering to yourself, and no one would blame you for that. The fact that you are who you are and you've done what you're doing, like, you are the outlier. You don't seem to understand how exceptional that is. Like,
you're the
how
exception
rare that
to the
is.
Rule.
And it's so weird when people say that, and I'm just like, okay, well, I'm just me. And they're like, yeah, that's the whole point. You are just you. Like, you are just you. That is what is so crazy about it. You're just you. That's
I think it's also so crazy. Like, I mean, you hear people that go through anything traumatic, and like, our bodies know to kind of shut out things and shut things down. So the fact that you can remember so much and you have so much of that like memory, it's crazy that like you remember exactly like the time it was and all that kind of stuff. Do you feel like all the details were there, or they were kind of slowly coming back in bits and chunks when you were like having to testify? You know, kind of what was that process like?
So one of the interesting things, I've always had an amazing memory. I don't know why, like so numbers, lucky. Math, things like that. Like like these details. I don't know. Somebody said it's in my star chart. I have no idea. Whatever. I'm a Pisces for anyone who's curious.
That makes so much sense. I have to say.
We're very pragmatic Pisces, born on 11/11, you know,
11/11. Those are angel numbers.
11, I know that's what I'm saying. 11:56 AM. And everybody's like, I'm like, it's 11/11. And they're like, oh, that's crazy.
I keep having 11/11s everywhere and 111s.
Yeah,
this is another one. Adding it to the list.
There you go.
Angel numbers,
the
y'all.
List. But the thing that they were saying to me, or the thing is that I have this memory, and you know, people, and even back then, my father's contention was like, oh, he was coached. You were coached on the witness stand. It was clear this and this that. It's like, no, I wasn't. The easiest thing in life to remember is the truth. And when I went, you know, the prosecutor had said to me, look, you don't need to testify. You don't need to do this. And I'm like, well, that's over my dead body, by the way. But yeah, that's okay. Fine, I appreciate that. When I was being cross-examined by my father's attorneys and they're trying to punch holes in my argument, I kept coming back with the same thing. And when people say, oh, you know, you were coached, you were so poised on the witness stand, you were so this and that. I'm like, well, yeah, because it's really easy when you're telling the truth. Like, do you think that I could remember some script that the prosecutor and police officers gave me over 2 days of testifying all day. I like to talk. I like the sound of my own voice, but that's a lot for me to remember right now at my age, let alone at 12 years old. Like,
absolutely.
And the fact that it's unwavering.
Yeah. Which so is what, unwavering.
Which is what, due to a lack of significant circumstance or a significant like real evidence, why my father was convicted for my mother's murder. Because you couldn't poke holes in my argument. The timeline was infallible. Like,
yeah, absolutely. It's so crazy. I also, if you're comfortable talking about it, I'm very interested to know, you mentioned your father being, you know, violent prior to this happening, but what was your relationship with your father like before? Was he always kind of showing these tendencies of like violence and manipulation and the whole nine?
Sure. So, yeah. And what's interesting about these letters, just to sort of go back to that.
Circle back, yeah.
Is I have not read them since I read them as a kid or as a young adult or an adult, right? So the when I'm reading them on the podcast, and what I'll do is I'm going to do it like in tandem with the TikTok is like I'm or do it right after. But that's the first time I'm looking at this material. Yeah. And in this last episode of the podcast, I read letters from my father's first year in prison. Now, honest to God, they're sitting under my desk. I literally pull them out of a bin and I just hope that they're in the right envelope. And I literally open them right there. Like, I don't pre-screen them. You know what I mean? I might peek and go, oh, is there a letter in here? Oh, there's no letter or whatever. But it's just an empty envelope. But I don't ever look at the material. Yeah, I don't ever look at the material because I want the I want to take the audience on a journey with me of like, hey, you know, I have unopened ones too that I'm going to get to, like probably 60 of them. And I want to, so I am starting to see like his seeds. So 1991, he's incarcerated, he's in his first year, and he's planting these little seeds of manipulation, which I didn't recognize as a kid. So I didn't recognize my father was manipulative. I recognized he was violent. He was very aggressive. He was very machismo. You know, he was very, you know, chauvinistic, I suppose, even though I didn't know what that term was at the time. You know, he was very aggressive, you know, and he was apoplectic. Like he could literally turn on the rage in a millisecond over nothing. You know, I remember, and I think I was sharing this with someone, I was making breakfast in the kitchen with my mother and I dropped an egg on the floor and he threatened to kill my mother. Like he lost his mind, slammed the door, broke the windows, like the whole thing. Like just
broke the windows?
Just like slamming the door so hard that it shatters the window panes. Like,
Jesus,
you know.
Christ.
And so there was things like that. And I grew up with that. So I was very afraid of my father and his temper. And then when my mother had gone to China, which was the only time she ever did leave me, she went to go visit my sister to get my sister, right? And I was supposed to go with her, but I had very bad asthma as a kid and I had gotten really bad asthma attack and my father and mother were like, you're not going on an airplane, because I probably would have died, like honestly. So I had to stay back with my father for almost 2 weeks, and this is like right before they got divorced. This is right before the murder. This is like February of 1989, and he just is so violent and abusive to me for 2 weeks. I'm terrified because I didn't want to watch like violent movies with him or something. He was into like violence. He had all these like war stories from Vietnam. And I was like, he's like, oh, I'm going to get my fighter pilot helmet for you to wear, Bumper. He would call me Bumper. That was my nickname as a kid. All this stuff. It just was like, you know, so I knew that he was kind of an asshole, like growing up. Even before my mother told me he was an asshole. Like, I knew he was an asshole. But what I did see is also a very kind and compassionate side to him with him being a doctor. Because I would go on his medical rounds with him. That was, like, our bonding time. And I would go and I would sing and tap dance for his patients in the hospital and all this silly stuff. And
talk to people.
But I do remember,
you're such a ham from day one. I love it.
From day one. So I would go with him. So I would see him as a compassionate healer, which I always found, you know, strange growing up. Like, how can you be? And also, like, his patients like refused to believe that he murdered my mother because he was such a good doctor. And it wasn't until I was interviewing Dennis Marikis, who is the psychologist from my film A Murder in Mansfield, in my podcast. I think the episode is called Surviving a Murder in Mansfield with Dennis Marikis. I believe it's episode 31. But I said to him, I posed him a question. I said, well,
his memory, why is like, it, okay, it, casual. Yeah. You're like, it's exactly episode
March
31.
29th, 2022.
I get it because I'm a numbers person. I totally get it.
No, I'm not a numbers person. I have to check every time I publish a new episode of the podcast. I have to count and be like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'm dead. Anyways.
I totally. Are you someone that like has all your credit cards memorized? Because like I memorize mine. Yeah, I'm the same way.
I mean, at least I use the same one. I use American Express all the time.
Yeah, same. Memorized. So yeah.
Yeah, I can't really.
Should I have this memorized? I guess I should. Relate. The only thing I don't have memorized nowadays is like phone numbers, really.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone does. But I used to be back before smartphones or, you know, you could ask me someone's phone number. I could be like, boom. So I posed to Dr. Dennis Merkus this question. I said, look, Dennis, how could it be that my father could be capable of committing this crime and being this violent of a human being? But at the same time, being such an amazing doctor, because he was, I'll give credit. My father was an amazing doctor. He was very empathetic.
What kind of doctor was he?
He was an osteopath, like a GP, okay. Like a general practitioner. And I remember how compassionate he was and how good he was and how much he loved that. And he goes, well, yeah, he's like, that is one of the professions that narcissists gravitate to because you're the role of the hero.
Because you're God. You're like a God complex. Exactly. Yeah.
And you're the healer. And I was like, I never thought about that until that moment. I was like, holy shit.
That is mind-blowing.
And he goes, yeah, that's why you see these people in these, and you don't think, but it plays right into their narcissism.
And they're
going to be good at it because they care about that. Like, that is what matters to them. So you're trying to sort of balance that, you know, why they're so caring and compassionate and not understanding that it's all agenda-filled.
It's
all about them still. And then you go, well, why can't he murder my mother? Why would he treat me this way? Why would he try to kill me? Why would he blame me for and manipulate me? You know what I mean? So it's this sort of weird dichotomy that you have to live with. And I don't know if I'll ever really reach the apotheosis of understanding all of this about my father, because I think it's sort of incomprehensible. Yeah. But it's certainly fascinating to me. And when I open these letters and I read these and I just remember the time that it was and what had happened and where we were. And I'm like, yeah, like this latest one, he said he watched Return of the Jedi with me at least 100 times. Now he was probably being, you know, a little hyperbolic, I suppose, but for effect, but you're telling that to like a 13-year-old kid because you're trying to manipulate them to feel a certain way about how you've been, right? Yeah. And then he goes into this illegal conviction and all this stuff. So it's very interesting. It's I grew up a long time in my life for a long time wondering, like, could I be capable of those things? Am I that person? Am I my father? Yeah. You know, and I was always, you know, you asked about like, was I open? How did it take me to be so open about my story? I've always been open about my story. I have never really been guarded at all. Like, I'm not a guarded person. I mean, I'm sure if you had a psychotherapist here, and I've dated a few of them, they will say, well, he's guarded in this way. He has to do this, but he's not. He's very vulnerable in telling some things, but certain things you won't get out of him or whatever it is, right? I've heard that like that happens,
well,
right?
Yeah,
but for the most part,
it
was
layers.
Part of my process. Yeah, for sure. And it was part of my process was to really, you know, to talk about it, because people would just, growing up in the same town that this all happened, just I couldn't go anywhere without people coming up to me and asking me questions. I mean, it still happens 30 years later. And I because people are curious and people were vested in me. It's like, that's why I use the child actor analogy. It's
mm-hmm. Totally.
they grew up with you, and they grew up with you on TV. You know, the trial was a month long. Everybody, it was televised live on television. The courtroom was like a circus. It was, it was a thing. So I would use those opportunities in lieu of therapy to just be like, okay, yeah, you want to know? I'll just tell you about it. And then people would just be like, you know what I mean? And some people are like, oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, he's so open about it.
And then people would be like, oh, well, we feel this way about your father. Oh, your father was so good. Don't you think he's a good person or whatever? But sorry, I didn't interrupt you. But yeah.
No. Totally fine. Yeah, that makes me mad for you, because it's like, don't tell me about my father. Like, bye. But no, I was going to say, I mean this not offensively at all, but when I first watched your TikTok, I thought it was like, you know how, I don't know how much you watch other TikToks, but a lot of people will like kind of like create fake scenarios, and it's more, it's like almost like television in a way. It's like,
oh, I've never picked up on that. I do notice they jump cut a lot of stuff, like, and I try to keep it all one take.
Totally. No, like some people will be like, oh my God, my boyfriend cheated on me, and like have this whole scenario, but it's like fake. So when I first watched it, I was like, he's so open about this, it can't be real. Like I had to rewatch it and be like, is this highbrow theater? Like what? Like yeah. I couldn't wrap my head around it. So I think that's definitely the reaction that people are having when you're being so vulnerable and open about it. Cause yeah.
I'm going to tell you something. Out of anyone in the world that wishes this wasn't my life, you know, and this was theater, it would probably be me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, on that same note, and I say that very cheekily, I also, and this would be, I guess, for your listening audience, that would be mostly in the sort of, you guys are discovering your lives and looking at what this will look like. I wouldn't change a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I am very happy with the person I turned out to be. And everything that I have been through has made me the person that I am. And I like who that person is.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
I want to tell my therapist that one day.
And it's a place that you sort of get to. I mean, of course, there are things that I'd love to change. I would love to like make more money, and I would love to have like more, you know, experiences. Like I'd love to take a vacation every once in a while. I'd love to do certain things. But when I look in the mirror now, and I never thought about it when I was younger, and I never thought about it when I was a kid, because it was just like, I'm just going to do this, right? Is that now that I'm firmly in my 40s, I can look in the mirror and I can go, you never sold out. You stayed true to yourself, and you're a genuine and authentic person, and you have integrity more than anything. Like your integrity is beyond reproach. Like you can't poke holes in anything I say, because I'm telling you the truth, and because I stood in integrity. And in a world where we are seemingly lacking these role models in those positions of authority, or that we look up to, that do create their own narratives that are not accurate or embellish. And my parents embellish their stories. And it's interesting because my father would tell these stories about like Vietnam, and he like literally, like I remember, and somebody asked me, do you remember this at the dinner table at one time? I was like, oh, I didn't remember him telling that. I've heard that story, but yeah, I guess I do remember that scenario. Yeah. Where he went down in like the South China Sea in his fighter plane, and his ejection seat wouldn't work. So he had to cut his way out of the cockpit with his trusty knife that he got from the Navy. I mean, just
ludicrous stuff.
Like just stuff so much. And my mother would tell like stories about like she, and this is when we got to Ohio, and she was in boarding school, in a private boarding school, which she was, but like her roommate was Candace Bergen, because Candace Bergen had a big show and she was from this, and she did go to a private boarding school, I believe, outside Philadelphia. But my mother embellished on things like that because, and that she came from a wealthy background, because what happened was, is my father was a naval doctor. We were living in Virginia on a naval base. Then we moved to Ohio. He enters private practice, and that's when he starts making money. But all of his peers were rich, right?
Yeah.
We were not. And so I think my mother felt, you know, not
like
threatened,
she had to
but
prove
like
herself.
She just fell out of place. Yeah. And she's like, well, I'm from we're from really humble beginnings. And not that some of these doctors weren't, they were from India, for Christ's sake. Like it's breaking out the caste system in India is one of the most difficult things in the
world. Yeah. Very difficult.
I mean,
yes.
Like they would have totally understood. So I think that, you know, everybody tells stories and they embellish things, but I kind of realized that like at a very young age, like, yeah, I'm not going to need to embellish anything, because nobody's going to believe this shit anyways.
Yeah, you're like, my shit's so crazy that I actually don't need to add details. But something I was going to say is, you earlier made a comment about how you like had questions while you were growing up about, am I like my father? Like, do I have the capability to do this? And it's just, I think, you know, you were talking about also like loving the person you are today and your integrity and all of that. And I think that's also something that like strikes people, because it's like you are so the opposite end of the spectrum from him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And do you think some of that comes from your mother? Because it seems like you two were really close And I feel like she was a positive influence, or must have been.
Oh, I mean, all of it comes from my mother. Yeah. I mean, my mother shaped my entire, you know, psyche, persona. You know, my mother, everything I, you know, and it's, you know, it's also, I want to write a book called Things I Learned From My Mother, right? And about my story, because there are, all of this I did learn at a young age, and I didn't really realize it or the significance of it until I made A Murder in Mansfield, and until I was screening it, and it was out, you know, and it was out in the world. Like, it came out on television. It was the end of 2018, and I had done screenings in my hometown and in Cleveland, and, you know, like I said, all over. We were in like 50 film festivals worldwide, maybe 60, which is a lot. None of them were true crime, and I wasn't into this whole true crime thing because I didn't know anything about it. I just made a film that is about a crime, but it's really about like moving past it, right? It's about it's about coming to terms with your past and not letting that affect your future. And there should be almost like a part two to it. Like, this is what happens now. Like, okay, you know, you know, because everything up until that moment that I walk into the room to confront my father was all about walking into the room to confront my father to get an answer, right? So everything that I, the whole reason that I got, came to LA for the weather, wanted to discover myself, wanted to go through, I love it out here, but getting into the film business and saying, okay, you know, so I'm a musician, so I went to music school and I was like, okay, I'll either tell my story one of two ways. I'll become a rock star, I'll become really famous, and then I'll tell my story and I'll use it as a platform to help others.
Yeah.
Or I'll be a filmmaker and I'll tell my story and I'll use it as a platform to help others. And then I'll still play guitar.
You seem like you've always been very creative. Like, even with the performing for the patients. And
I've never held a real job. I mean, outside of waiting tables when I was 21, like 22. Yeah. I mean, since I stopped, all I do is create, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
As creators, we love that.
You know, very stressful because you're always...
When's the next paycheck?
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's crazy. As you get, you know, you were talking about my camera and stuff. It's like when I got into podcasting, I was at this podcasting thing, this like convention a couple months ago. This girl comes up to me in a sheer panic. She's telling me, she goes, you know, God, 95% of podcasters don't make any money. And I was like, yeah, I kind of like those odds because I come from filmmaking and pretty much like 99% of people don't
make money. You make a film. And actors.
You're like, I'm already feeling pretty good.
Yeah, you're
like,
I
like these odds. She's looking at me like, you know, and it's, again, you know, the grind and the hustle of being a creator. And now that is like something that is of the moment, right? Oh, I'm a creator. Like that wasn't around like 5-10 years ago. Like I didn't call myself a creator. I call myself a creative or a filmmaker. But like now people are actually just creating content for brands and they're doing it very organically, which is amazing. I mean, these iPhones are incredible. And the amount of technology you have available to you is amazing. But it is a grind. It's a hustle every single day, and you're competing against, and if you come to LA, you're competing against the best people in the
everyone
world.
I know, it's crazy. But do you think your mom like instilled that like work ethic in you as
100%. So one of the amazing things that has happened is like, so my family, my birth family doesn't talk to me at all, but for whatever reason, and it's not because of me not trying. Like, I've been like, water under the bridge, I know you weren't there for me. It doesn't matter. I don't care. Like, it's all about moving forward. It's all about growing and learning. And I don't care. And like, when I became an adult, I'm like, I see how these were really hard circumstances for people. And not everybody can be like me and just like roll with the fucking punches, right?
Totally.
But that's what I learned from my mother. So making the podcast, I was touched upon this way earlier. But I've had second cousins and people that were in the family that were sort of outsiders of the family, you know, not had never really met me, but had heard about me, but heard about what happened and just assumed that the family took me in. And then they find all this out. But the amazing thing is when they discover the podcast or they watch the film, they are like, you are a carbon fucking copy of your mother. You're exactly how I remember Noreen. And stuff like that, I'm going to get emotional, but stuff like that is more precious than gold to me. Yeah. And they're like, your mannerisms, the way the inflections in your voice, the way that you have this presence, that was your mother, 100%. And then I found out, like, and I actually found this out from my father's sister before I made A Murder in Mansfield. I met with her because I was doing, you know, pre-production. And she did tell me some really amazing things about my mother. It was a really great man. I hadn't seen her in 25 years, but she did tell me, this is my father's sister, not my mother's sister.
Yeah, weren't they close? I remember.
No. My mother was never close with her sister, really. And she doesn't, I haven't spoken to her in 30 years, probably. Yeah. Close to it. She
you know, she doesn't want to have anything to do with it.
Oh, it was your grandma was close.
Yeah, she was very close to my grandmother, yeah. who was my father's yeah. mother, because she yeah. wasn't really close with her mother. Mm-hmm. But she, you know, she told me, she's like, you know, your, so my mother was German-Irish. So my German grandfather, who I knew, you know, he was my pop-up, and I loved him definitely. My mother really loved him. But because her older sister was sort of a rebel and a misfit and like hanging out with all the drinkers and stuff, they turned to my mother, and he turned to my mother and was very pedantic about her education. Like, you're going to be educated, you're going to learn this and this and this. So my mother treated me the same way. And because my mother was the chief influential person in my life, right? She was always there, always talking to me. And my mother treated me like an adult. And that's why I was saying when about the getting back to making the film and showcasing it. A friend of mine who became a therapist did a lot of trauma work with children, worked with a guy named Dr. Bruce Perry, who is very famous for, he's been on Oprah. He just wrote a book. He's a world famous child psychologist. She's like, I want to explain to you why you are the way you are and how you were able to handle this. And she's like, children are brought up to a certain level by the people that are in their lives at early development. The fact that your mother, because your father wasn't there, treated you like a, like almost like a spouse or a partner, and didn't baby talk you, treated you like a, like an adult. My mother used to always joke, you know, he's 10 going on 40. Aww. It's very true. Yeah. And you see it within the footage.
You can tell. You can tell in the footage. Yeah.
She 100%. Treated me. There was no baby talk. There was not that my mother wasn't tender and loving with me. She most certainly was, but she treated me like an adult. And
yeah, she didn't baby you.
And that is, that is the reason. She said when you are, when children are dropped, or people in general are dropped from these high heights, depending on how they were developed early on, means how much they bounce up. And it, normally they bounce up only to a level where they're in the fight or flight. You bounce up into the okay, what we're doing now, let's respond, let's move forward, let's give action. Like, I understand what happened, I will deal with that, but I'm going to put that aside. We're going to find my mother. Like, we're going to put my father, like, action, action, action. And it's an interesting way when you look at trauma, and I'm discovering more and more of this as I talk about it on the podcast, as I interview people, as I engage with people from doing this work, just interactions through TikTok, right? Is I'm realizing how key these early child development things are, in, and they play a role in how you respond to violence, how you respond to society as a whole, how you respond to hardship, blah, 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 all these things. So it was fascinating. But yes, my mother, the way that she treated me is the only reason why I'm like still here. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think about my other friends that were coddled, relatives that were coddled. You know, I don't, you know, those people can't handle a lot, you know what I mean? And not that they haven't had their fair share of dealing with things, but like, it's interesting. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's different.
Everyone's journey is different too. I'm not here to you know,
judge. Yeah.
Do you, I know you said like you aren't necessarily in contact with like family and stuff, but with some of the friends of your mom that you said you contacted kind of right after everything happened, are you, do you talk to them at all anymore, or is it kind of just...
Or your sister as well. What about... Sure. I was curious about that.
So my Aunt Shelley, who is in the... you know, who's like her best friend, who is in the film, I still talk to her. We do on Facebook. We'll call. You know, she still has a hard time with all of this. She has a hard time with me talking about it on the podcast. Like, she doesn't listen or anything, because she she felt very hurt by my mother in a way that she felt that my mother had to put up, you know, these facades with her. But she was actually my mother's only real friend, and my mother didn't put up certain facades with her, right? But like, about her family history and things. So it's just a little painful for her at times. The other ones, no, because Shelley was the most significant, and the other ones, I don't know. They just don't.
Yeah, and you tried, and they didn't really receive.
Yeah, and you know, but it's fine. And I don't need to carry on those relationships. I have relationships with some of their children, you know, and it's cool. But like, my best friend growing up in high school, he moved out here to L.A., and then he was an asshole. What can I say? He lives in your neck of the woods now. But like, you know, a lot of people that had a lot of hard time dealing with that. And a lot of my friends also were like, well, you know, I was supposed to be the fuck up kid. Right. And not that I haven't done things that are stupid. I absolutely have. Like, I've had my share of fuck ups, but I have my life together, and I'm ambitious. And these are all things that my mother taught me, and not, I can't say that with a lot of people that I grew up with.
And they're probably envious of that.
And maybe some of them. I mean, I'm talking about very close people that were like really close friends. Some of them are, some of them are not. Some of them are cheerleaders. Some of them, you know, there's great people still in my life. But I feel like, you know, I feel like sometimes people resent. And even like in Hollywood, I mean, this is a, you know, I remember a director saying to me, I remember you telling me that you were going to make your story when I met you. You were telling me a little bit about this. You were writing a script. You were doing this. And then it's like, I saw your movie. Like, you did it. I was like, well, yeah, I did it.
You're like,
he's like, obviously. Yeah. He's like, but everybody says that when they move to LA. And I was like, well, I'm not everybody. I mean, yeah. I actually mean what I say. Like, have you not seen it? He was just like, you could tell, like, when you're talking to people, like, they are, in one sense, really admiring you for doing what you did and really envious of it at the same time.
Yeah,
and it
was, absolutely. It's,
and Hollywood's full of haters anyways, but it's oh, an don't interesting we know it. Scenario for sure. So,
Yeah, the whole, I mean, Hollywood and the whole acting, you know, film scene, it can take a lot out of you. But I mean, I do think that drive is just so awesome. And I don't know, we're not done with the interview yet. I mean, I could talk to you for as long as you want to talk, but thank you so much for like just being so open with all of this with us, because I mean, it's fascinating. You really do have stories for days. It's crazy.
The crazy thing is like, I only talk about like all of this. Like I don't ever talk about like, and I can't really, I have so many stories about Hollywood. So I know that your focus is like, so I'm going to, and I won't get into like, like name dropping or stories, but like I found myself in the center of a lot of shit when I got here. Mm-hmm. And this is why, you know, and I was thinking about this ahead of your podcast, because you're like, oh, you know, you're coming of age, like you're in your 20s, mid 20s. So when I grew up and when I moved out here, and I was living in Orange County before I moved to LA, because I had a job down there. I worked at a Latin nightclub in downtown Disney. But I would commute to LA to go on auditions and stuff. But I was at an all-you-can-eat Chinese buffet, and this guy comes up to me, and I could tell he was like eyeballing me or whatever, and he goes, you have the most beautiful eyes. And I was like, oh, thank you. And he goes, I'm a modeling agent. I discover models. And I was like, oh. And I was heavier. And he's like, you know, you could be a model, right? And I was like, I know, I'm a little fat, blah, blah, blah. He's like, well, and I think I made up some excuse, like I was gaining weight for a role in a play I was doing or something. Let me just be honest. I don't think I did make up that.
That did happen.
And it was like, because I was embarrassed, right? And then he goes, well, how quickly, you know, I went to his office, he showed me some stuff, and he goes, how quickly do you think you can lose the weight? And I was like, I don't know. And 4 months later, I came back to him. I lost 56 pounds in 4 months.
Whoa.
Because I was a waiter and I was active. But I was also going to the gym and I was eating like chicken and vegetables every day. I was like, I got my shit together. And he's like, yeah, you're a beautiful, like classically good looking man. You should work. And so when I came to LA, I was like, very, you know, still this like, you know, hometown, like Ohio kid that has been through all this massive trauma and shit. And you start going out, you start, and then you realize, and I don't mean this to sound crass or anything, but like, it is very daunting when you go from this sort of low self-esteem. You come through the trauma that I'm coming through. You come into this big city where you're nobody and everyone wants to fuck you.
Oh my God.
And I'm sorry, so but funny. It's like, but it was so weird because I got skinny and I
you're
started
like,
taking
it's out of
Molly,
body.
And I'm just like, and like men, women, it's just I was at a
Kukuru. I thought that's where I thought the story was going. I thought he was going to try to fuck you and it was going to be like a famous actor or something. Like I was like,
but I mean, I have so many stories of being propositioned and being engaged with people are like, we will give you whatever you want. Just be my boyfriend. Like,
oh my God. I love the B theme of your like love life in this whole interview. It's so fascinating.
It's like wild. And you're like, and you think about it like now, like, should I have taken that? Should I have done that? Should I have taken this Hollywood power agent that represented everyone that was like, just be with my boyfriend. I don't really care. And he was a cool dude. And I was like, you know, and I have definitely experimented with men. I've had relationships with men, and you know, you, like I like I said, it, like this modeling agent told me, he's like, well, if you don't eat chocolate cake, how do you know? Because I was telling him about my experience. So I was like,
you got it. He's like, only you live
if you don't
once.
If you don't eat chocolate cake, how do you know if you like you don't like chocolate cake? As long as you're safe, like nobody cares. And I was like, okay, yeah, cool. Yeah, and totally. I was like, hey, it didn't work for me. You know, yeah. And which I think is also a really great thing for people in their 20s to do is to sexually yeah. experiment. I know that that might be really hard for some people to understand, but you should if you feel the urge, because you do not want to be. I have many friends who are gay who were married to women, you know, who are trying to lead this lifestyle, trying to deny themselves of who they are, you know, men and women. Trying to, because they were afraid or they were religious or whatever it is. And for me, I was like, fuck it. I don't care. Like as long as I'm safe and I'm not doing anything stupid or I'm not putting my life at risk or getting a disease, you know, I'll try it. And then I go, okay, that didn't work for me. Great. And you know, and I've had women get really daunted by that. I'm like, but aren't you glad that you know that you're with a guy that got that shit out of his system and won't hit you up in 10 years and be like, you
so
know,
true. I'm won't, okay, like, honey. Leave you.
And I know we have a kid and I know we have a kid, but I'm going to leave you for this man. And because
which happens.
That shit happens.
It happens a lot. Yeah. Honestly, like full disclosure, I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I had a similar experience where I like hooked up with a friend and I was like, oh, okay. So I like kissing anyone. I think women are beautiful. But vaginas, not it for me. But I was glad I knew. Like, I had that information now. I was like, cool. Because believe me, I mean, no offense, but men can be the absolute worst. So it'd be nice 100%. To be like in a hot lesbian couple. But unfortunately, that's not my journey. It's not my journey.
And it's just, you know, but again, you know, kudos to at least experimenting that and experimenting with that, you know, without shame and guilt and, you know. I think that, you know, and you will be glad later on in life that you did that, because you'll be like, I don't ever wonder about that anymore.
Absolutely.
I don't ever wonder about these things. And I think that that is like, as you get older and you see friends that are getting married and get into relationships and have children, and then you watch these things, you know, as a perpetually single guy, you watch these things crumble.
Perpetually single.
And professionally single, I suppose. I mean, might as well be that now.
I was like, are we adding that to your resume? Or
maybe,
like, it's on
maybe.
Mine.
I have no idea. It's, but I, you know, you see these relationships begin to crumble right before your eyes and be like, you know, whether it's they're drifting apart or, but they're in a marriage and then it's like, oh, now we're fucked. Now we have the kids and now we're angry about things or whatever. And you kind of sit back with this sort of spectator's perspective of, see, I wonder if you guys had just cut loose a little bit and not gotten married like right out of high school.
Totally.
Or
if you wouldn't look back and be like, oh, I want to fuck this person. I should have tried this, and kicking themselves. Yeah.
You know, we call that in the Midwest, so you're wild oats. And look, it's not for everybody. Like, I would love to have married my high school girlfriend. And I'm glad that didn't happen. But, you know, there is something to be said with a long-term partner and things that you can. But and I am a completely, you know, celibate and I'm a one woman guy type of situation. I'm not, you know, I'm not into the poly thing or anything like that. But I do think that when you look at relationships, and I'm constantly thinking about this as someone who doesn't have a significant other at the moment, that it's like, you know, you begin to go, okay, well, I'm glad I really did that. I'm glad I really did this. Mm-hmm. I mean, hell, I recently dated a porn star.
No, you didn't.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wait, can
who
you
found
say
me
the
on
name?
TikTok. I'm not going to say it.
Okay, fair. Oh, this is recent.
This was like a month ago recent.
Okay, I thought when you said that.
And I
that
shouldn't
meant,
say
like,
dating. She was like, we weren't dating. I was like, okay, but you were calling me. Let me ask you something. Since we're just on
let's,
topic
yeah,
of this. And you're of
do
this age.
We're getting the tea.
When
we are
you
getting
call,
the
this
tea.
Is the tea. When you start calling someone babe and baby, does that mean you're engaging in a relationship?
I mean, it doesn't mean your boyfriend, girlfriend necessarily, but it means you are definitely dating. Like,
it depends on the situation. Like, if someone's doing that and it's not in a like super private setting, I think it like it automatically makes it exclusive.
More,
Because it's like, then who the heck would go and like say anything?
Interesting. Okay. So it wasn't in a public setting, but it was definitely baby this, baby that, baby that, like all this. And I was like, you realize you call me baby? She's like, well, yeah. Is that okay? And I was like, oh, well, no, I like it. I'm into it. Like, yeah. I like you. Like, I think you're cool. Like, I actually liked her. Like, I actually liked her personality. That's what I thought was really cool. I mean, she wasn't even my normal type. You'd be like, she doesn't fit. When I showed a picture over to my friend, they were like, that's who you're. I was like, well, yeah. I'm like, we're not.
What does she look like? I'm curious. But you're
Italian, dark hair, dark eyes.
Okay, you know? Got it.
Beautiful girl. Like, beautiful girl, but also really cool. And it was like, oh, I was like, I can sit here and talk to you. Like, and you know, we
refreshing you know, in LA. She's a Taurus.
She was a Taurus, or she is a Taurus, and I'm a Pisces. So that is a very good connection. Well, so I was bummed. So I was bummed, and then she just kind of like flipped out on me. She had a lot of drama with her ex-boyfriend, and they were going to go to Paris together and all this stuff anyways. So I'm not gonna mention that name, that's good.
You avoided that probably. Perfect.
All right, guys, Collier is down for the game. So we are about to play the 7 tea questions. Heck, because he loves the tea, and we got to get it. Yep.
We got to do it. Okay, so Collier, the first question is, what is the current tea in your life?
The current tea in my life.
Well, we kind of just got it.
We just covered that. the relationship with the porn star. The other porn star relationship would be the non relationship. That was the sliding into the DMs from seeing me on TikTok. That was
the tea.
Was definitely the most juicy tea for sure.
There you
That's
go.
The so rapid it was an fire. Automatic so rapid first fire. Question. Great. Amazing. Next question is: what is the smallest hill that you're willing to die on?
Dyeing my hair blonde. Because I dyed it dark for so long, and people were like, well, we liked you with the dark hair. And I'm like, well, I like the lighter, because I live by the beach and it was already going blonder, because it was my hair is like a medium brown, so it would get lighter in the sun because I'm in the sun all day. And
people
really have strong opinions about growing my hair long, and like, why are you coloring it that? I'm like, well, I dyed it before, guys, so don't think that it was always dark. Like, now it's just I'm putting highlights in it, and I like it. That's the smallest hill I'll die on.
Literally,
I like
it. Why are that's people trying to tell you what to do with your life? I it's like that so, you're like, it's nah, so funny. It's not so, doing
it's
it.
It's being public. Exactly. People just have opinions. It's funny. Yeah,
they really do.
Okay, who either now or historically is your celebrity crush?
So I would say like any celebrity or like movie star or
any kind, any public facing person.
Well, I remember when I first came to LA, I hung out with Jennifer Aniston, and you talk about somebody who was
you also
dope,
look like you could be like related to her,
who is dope. And you talk about somebody who, thank you, who was dope and sort of, and very authentic, sitting there smoking cigarettes with her manager, drinking margaritas, getting wasted. It was so much fun. I was like, oh, she was cool. I was like, oh, she would be like a real crush, because she just seemed like a really down and dope girl. I also think, God, you put me on the spot, because I definitely know that I have a few.
You're like, I need to put this in
I
the
think,
universe.
You know, God, I mean, I don't know. I think that the cuteness of there's something I've always found about like girls that are really cute and have these little quirky things about them. Jennifer Aniston would definitely be one of those people. Yeah. You know, stunningly beautiful people like Angelina Jolie, but you can just tell that she's probably just a
bitch.
I don't know about that, but I mean, she's probably like a lot. I mean, a lot of people are a lot. I was thinking about when I met Taylor Swift years ago. I was filming her for something.
He's so casual about it. He's like,
Well, I was actually thinking about it last night, because I saw if something popped up on the internet, and I was like, yeah. I was like, she was, you know, she was obviously young at the time. This is 10 years ago. But I remember thinking like, wow, she's really, I can see why people gravitate to her. She has a great personality, but she's probably just a nightmare to date, because she's also not in
a
bad, like, she's a bad person,
songs.
Because she's so creative and she's so passionate. She's so, it takes, I'm like that. I mean, I'm not successful like Taylor Swift, but like, you become locked in. That's a hard person to deal with when they get so locked into that. And then they come out, they're like, okay, cool, I'm fine, let's go to the store. And then just like, what happened? If you're not able to switch gears on a dime, it's very hard to be in a relationship with something like that.
It takes a certain type of person, definitely. Yeah,
it does.
Absolutely. Well, I love those two stories, so that's exciting.
Yeah, that's cool.
What is your go-to guilty pleasure?
I don't know how guilty it is, but so, and actually it is a guilty pleasure, because they've changed it and it makes me angry. Justin's Honey Peanut Butter. You know,
what
Justin's
is
Organics.
That? This feels like
peanut
a
butter,
hill
it has
as well.
Honey. It has honey
it's
in
really
it.
It's really good.
It's amazing. And it used to be 100% peanuts. No, Justin's. Or Justin's. Is it Justine's? Justine's?
It's definitely Justin's.
But it's like at Whole Foods and Erewhon.
Yeah,
right?
It's at Whole Foods and all this stuff. And it's, but it's honey peanut butter. And they make honey almond butter as well. But now it's 85% peanuts and then it's 15% palm oil. And I still eat it. But it's not as good as when it was all the peanuts. They just changed it like 6 months ago.
How rude.
So palm oil is very caustic to the environment, and then also it's like not as healthy, and I'm like, but I love this, and I literally will dip dark chocolate in like 88% dark chocolate in this honey peanut butter and eat it. Yeah, that is a guilty pleasure.
I love 100%.
And nobody sees me do it. It's in my kitchen. I look around.
Yeah,
is anybody watching me at midnight on a Thursday? And then I go for it.
And then you go for it.
I love it. Okay, who is someone that is currently inspiring you?
I am actually constantly inspired by seeing these creators that are on social media and TikTok, like these authentic people that are telling their stories. And there's a girl that's on TikTok. I cannot remember her name, but she has Tourette's syndrome. I'm sure you know who this person is. She got like 5 million followers. And I see stuff like that. And she might even be underage, but she's sharing her story. And I remember when I saw her stuff and I follow her, she's really exposing an extremely vulnerable side of her, and she has, it's bad. Like it's not, and the awareness that she's creating and just the ability, and as a filmmaker and as a creative, like for her sharing that just unabashedly, just this is who I am, is very courageous. So I see people like that, that are using the power of this pulpit, of this, smartphone device, the internet, to tell stories about things that matter really. I do love the trend that is happening, and I think it's because of people like her, myself included, like all of us that are doing these types of things to really bring out organic content that is authentic and real. Totally. I think that I like that trend of where everything is going.
Me too.
I like that authenticity.
It's so funny because I think this is also like a thing with, millennials and older generations. Like, I have some friends who kind of like push back against it. They're like, oh, people don't need to be sharing that much, putting that much out there. I'm like, I'm so the opposite. I'm like, I am here for it. It's like the anti-opposite of what Instagram is, where we're trying to filter everything and like blah, blah, blah. Like, I think Gen Z, gotta give credit where credit is due, like has been so great at just like trying to break stigmas and be authentic and be
it's very cool,
it's just very inspiring. It's just, and so inspires me to be more
see
that
people
way
like them,
and
it's,
I would
not
say
just
the people the people that are doing that, like that's cool, like that's real fucking power. That's not some bullshit. That's real power. And you see it in older people too, like Gary Vee is much like that. You have Gary Vaynerchuk, and he just, like, people that are just doing shit, that aren't talking, that are doing. Like, that's the thing. So many people talk, so many people are opinionated. It's like, if you're going to do shit, it's like, I have friends that are like, they were talking about, the Roe v. Wade thing and before it even happened and, this and that. And I'm like, so are you an activist? Like, you're talking like an activist, but are you actively? Well, no. I'm like, I have friends that have gotten arrested. Like my director of my film, Barbara Koppel, got arrested like 4 times with Jane Fonda protesting.
Good for her. Like, Jane Fonda, talking about people who inspire you. Jane Fonda is like all I aspire to be.
She's pretty cool.
She's fucking amazing. But
yeah, like that's the shit that rings. Like walk your talk. That's the thing.
I love that. Okay, next question is, what is something that you get Sunday scaries about?
Well, so Sunday scaries, I recently heard what that was, but that has to do with like being hungover, right? Is that it?
No, well, not necessarily. Oh, that can make
some people
the scaries
talk, like, how do you
worse
fight the Sunday scaries? So I guess Sunday scaries, like anxiety of like the next week starting type of thing.
And just like Sundays.
Yeah, because these are like things that people like that don't have normal, they have normal jobs, or like, oh, I gotta go back to work tomorrow. It's really, how do I fight that? I mean, I try to.
No, what do you get Sunday scaries?
Oh, what do
about?
I get Sunday scaries about? Yeah. I used to get really like angry and like pent up and like nervous, and I still kind of do it actually, like before shoots. And I'll be like, I just fucking don't want to work with this person. I don't want to fuck. I have to get this fucking gear. I have to fucking do this. I have to. Then all the things got to be perfect. Like I throw this like mini temper tantrum within myself. And sometimes like, it affects me like when I go to bed and I'm like, I fucking don't have time to go to the gym in the morning because I got to be on set at like 7 a.m. and they don't open until 6. And I can't want to. Like I go through this whole thing. And then. Yeah. And then I get over it, and then I get to set, and I'm like, this is like the greatest thing ever. Or like the podcast, oh, I got to record these interviews. I can't get through. Oh, yeah,
this is the greatest thing ever. I can relate.
Like, you need to be like,
yeah, you're like, I don't want to do this. And then you're like, oh, wait, I'm doing what I love. Okay, I'm going to calm down.
Yep.
Literally you with comedy last night. Yeah.
And you're having this mini temper tantrum in your head, and it's so funny to me. I'm like, you're so ridiculous.
So
like,
true. That's
you
had
an amazing life. Like, you realize that.
Literally calm down. Like, you have to like tell yourself, you're like, calm the fuck down.
I love it. Okay, the last one is, what is something that we or your listeners or your followers may not otherwise know about you?
You're like, I mean, they know everything.
I'm like, they know like everything. And now I just talked about like a quasi relationship with an adult film star. I mean, geez.
I'm dead.
You know what? I think what maybe they think is like, you know, I'm always on, or I'm always like, you know, I am a perpetually happy and optimistic person, but I have my dark days. And I'm going to start talking about that more, because like, sometimes I'll just be like, fuck, this just isn't working out the way I want it. I want so much more. I want things to move faster. I want the podcast audience to grow faster. I want to monetize this. I want to do this. I want to get paid for doing this content. Like I definitely have those moments in where I just kind of like have a mini breakdown of frustration, but I don't really share that. And I need to share more of that, because that is also part of being vulnerable. It's not only my story, but like, yeah, I have massive self-doubt a lot of times, or I have trouble picking out things and going, okay, this is really good, Collier. You should recognize this. I'm getting better at it. But as I'm getting more familiar, because also I'm doing all this in front of the camera. Like I've been the behind the camera guy. You know, I'm the cinematographer. Yeah. I'm the guy that makes everybody look pretty and sound good and all this. And everything looks visually awesome and directing and things. So to turn it on me and expose my life is like, I'm still coming to terms with this. I mean, this is a very recent thing in the last year that I've been doing this. I mean, even the film with me being in the film was not supposed to be that. I was supposed to be shooting it, and then I was going to be in parts of it. And then it's like, okay, now it's just going to be you. I'm like, what? Okay. But it was amazing how it was. Barbara Coppola was like, you know, you need to take us on this journey, not us being taken on a journey. Like,
I agree with that 100%.
And that was what was really cool about it. So
I love it. And then one final question I do want to ask is, what is something, since you do have so much insight and have like this wealth of experience in your life, what is something that you would tell your younger self or some of the younger listeners who are trying to navigate their lives?
See, now I just started tearing up. No, I'm
like, aww, I love when people cry on the podcast. Is that bad?
I mean, I think the thing that I would just say to like my younger self and to anyone is, be yourself. It's worth it. Don't compromise. Don't settle, because it will all be okay.
Okay, now I'm gonna cry.
I know, I'm like, I'm gonna cry.
We both just looked at each other. We're like,
live your dreams. Like, fucking literally catch the dream in flight. Like, literally catch the dream in flight. That is literally what you need to do. Catch the dream in flight. Because I don't know if it happens more times, but it's happening right now. So go for that shit. My mother always used to say, grab the brass ring. Which with carousel horses, you grab the brass ring. It was an old time thing. But that's like when I confronted my father, and when I went, you know, was on the witness stand and all those things. I always think about my life, grab the brass ring, like seize the fucking moment. You know?
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much. It was so wonderful having you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Can you let everyone know where they can find you, follow you?
Yes. So my website is collierlandry.com. collierlandry.com. You can find me on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter at Collier Landry, Facebook, same thing, but I use TikTok and Instagram the most. And then the podcast is called Moving Past Murder. It is available on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts from. And also I have a YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/Collier Landry. If you go to my website, though, everything is there for everyone to find, and all the socials and my TED Talk and all that stuff. So,
yeah. Wow. Awesome. I have to watch the TED. I haven't watched the TED Talk. But yeah. And then also for the listeners, I will be linking all of that in the episode description as well. And then, as always, you can follow me at CKNY1213 and the podcast at WTF Sup Pod.
And you can follow me at Nina Barnett on Instagram and at Neens Barnett on TikTok.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, guys.